Take heart. He's calling you. There's an ancient Chinese story, at least that's what I've been told, that I came across recently. There was a farmer who had an old horse that he used for tilling his fields. One day, the horse escaped from its corral and went up into the hills, and when the farmer's neighbors heard about it, they sympathized with the old man over his bad luck. Bad luck? Good luck? Who knows? Said the farmer. A week later, the horse returned with a herd of wild horses from the hills, and then from the neighbors came congratulations about his good luck. Good luck? Bad luck? Who knows, said the farmer. Then when the farmer's son was attempting to tame one of those wild horses, he fell off its back and broke his leg. Everyone agreed that that was bad luck. Well, not the farmer, who replied, bad luck, good luck, who knows. Some weeks later, the army marched through town, forcing every able-bodied young man who could fight in a bloody war to go with them. When they came upon the farmer's son and saw his broken leg, they let him stay. Everyone was so happy for the farmer's good luck. And the farmer said, good luck, bad luck, who knows? Who knows indeed? Life's a lot like that, isn't it? Sometimes it seems that things are going really well, and other times they seem to be going quite badly. Some people believe it's based on luck. Some people think it's based on fate. Still others believe that God is the one who grants good fortune or bad circumstances to reward or punish us. I was very aware of the power of luck when I was serving in Toronto among many ethnic groups. That luck played a big deal in how people viewed their circumstances. Many decisions were made by individuals from different ethnic backgrounds based on their belief that they could enhance or just simply protect their level of luck. For example, you may not know this. Traditional Chinese folk will not normally buy a home with the number 4 in its address. The reason? The Mandarin Chinese symbol for the number 4 is similar to the symbol for death. And they believe it's bad luck to have anything even remotely close to the symbol of death. The number 6, though, is quite lucky. In our culture, what do we have? We have a lucky rabbit's foot. Well, it's not so lucky for the rabbit, is it? I didn't understand that. There's 4-leaf clovers. There are many people who avoid the number 13. In fact, we have a lot of buildings around this country where if they're tall enough, they don't have a 13th floor. People avoid walking under ladders. And some people get quite terrified if a black cat crosses their path. We knock on wood when we feel that we've tempted fate, or we toss salt over our shoulder thinking that if we spilled some salt on the table, it's bad luck, so we toss some over our shoulder. Oh, and heaven help you. Heaven help you if you break a mirror. If you break a mirror. Sports professionals have all kinds of rituals that they think will bring them luck in a playoff run. For example, the playoff beard. Which looks awful, by the way, but anyway. Whether we think it be luck or divine involvement, all of us know what it's like to feel like we're being tossed around by circumstances. We all want to have some explanation of why these things are happening to us. So when I read about the Apostle Paul in Philippians 4, learning to be content, even happy in all things, I just wonder if he's all there mentally. He writes that he was happy when things were bad. Remember, most of his letters were written while he was in prison. And he was happy when things were going well. Well, duh, that's easy. Elsewhere, Paul writes in Romans 8:28, we know that in everything God works for good for those who love him. Is that really true? Is that your experience? When all of life seems to be conspiring against us, what possible good can I look forward to? I'm sure that on more than one occasion, maybe daily even, Bartimaeus must have questioned the goodness of God. Not only was he a blind man, but it is clear that he was living in extreme poverty. It is likely that he was also quite lonely, as few women would marry a blind man in Jesus' day because, well, they simply couldn't provide income. In Jesus' day, a man or a woman in the circumstances like Bartimaeus had very few options to stay alive. And begging was one of those few options. And Bartimaeus had chosen what he thought was the only open course to him. So every day he came or was led to the main road from Jericho to Jerusalem. It's also possible that he simply just lived at the side of the road where he spread his cloak in front of him and he called out to people who were going by to give him money or alms. The Passover was drawing very close and there would be a lot more travelers on the road going to Jerusalem. So Bartimaeus probably hoped or had an expectation that maybe because there was more pilgrims going on a religious pilgrimage, they would be more generous. I don't know how many of you have had this experience. It happened to me a lot. When we were in Toronto, we would go to a big event downtown, like a Blue Jays game. And as we were making our way back to the subway or the train station, beggars would park themselves at major junctions on the pedestrian walkway, usually between by doors, hoping that because people were happy, they'd just been to an event, they might give them a little bit of extra money. Surely no one would intentionally choose the life that Bartimaeus had. Although there are recorded stories of children in poor countries being intentionally disabled to gain sympathy as they beg, that's true actually. Given a choice, Bartimaeus would probably rather be doing something else, almost anything else. Bartimaeus had another strike against him, though, that we often overlook, or maybe we would rather not think about. In his culture and the Jewish belief system of that time, it was believed that disabilities and deformities were caused by sin. In John 9, if you want an example of this, read about another man who was born blind. Excuse me. And the disciples asked, whose sin caused this man to be born blind? Was it his own or was it his parents? It's not an idle question, is it? Some people even today believe that calamities that fall on people are the result of God's divine retribution, like the great flood in Noah's day. I've heard people, perhaps famous people or preachers, speculate that AIDS is God's judgment on homosexuals, even though thousands of heterosexuals die of the disease every year. I've heard burning sermons about how hurricanes like the one that recently devastated Florida was God's vengeance on a city or a state or a country. Is that true? If it is, you know what? I'd rather be governed by bad luck and good luck. I'd rather have a mindless series of events than a directed, hostile intervention by God. There are in this world a lot of angry and disillusioned people who feel like life has dealt them a bad hand. People who feel they have to make difficult decisions, like right now in our news programs, the thousands of refugees who are marching from Honduras through Mexico trying to get into the United States. Is there any reason at all to believe the Apostle Paul when he says that good things come to those who love the Lord? So what are we to say to those whose life experience has been difficult? What response can we make to the thousands of desperate people right now in this world who are displaced by war, by economic hardship, just plain hopelessness? How do we pronounce hope to a man and woman like Bartimaeus? Or the folks that we encounter even in our own community looking for spare change? Maybe we wonder how we can glean hope for ourselves. I guess the first thing we need to settle is this. What exactly do you want? When Jesus first asked this question of Bartimaeus, I, like you perhaps, wondered, how omnipotent Jesus really is. Does he not see that Bartimaeus is blind? Isn't it obvious to anyone what he wants? I mean, he's stumbling around trying to reach Jesus, arms outstretched, feeling his way. Are the needs of people not clearly obvious to anyone with eyes and ears to hear? Eyes to see and ears to hear. The more pressing question, of course, is, isn't it obvious what I need or we need in our distress? I'm sure it was obvious to Jesus, but maybe not to us. Maybe the greatest personal pain we experience has to do with not really knowing what we want, what we need. We may know what our immediate needs are, but what is the thing that we need that will enhance our lives going forward? Now think about Bartimaeus for a moment. Here is a blind man who for years sat on the busiest road out of his city with his outer coat laid down to collect probably pennies mostly. What does he want from Jesus? Does he really want to be healed? Perhaps we forget that if he is healed, Bartimaeus is going to have to get a job. He can no longer use his blindness as a reason to beg from other people. Instead of sitting at the roadside, he's going to have to get up every day and go and work maybe in farm fields or something like that. Is he prepared for that? Commentators on this passage point out that this incident probably occurred on the road between the old city of Jericho and the new city of Jericho. There was two of them, actually. The symbolism is powerful. If Bartimaeus is healed, he'll have to move from the old ways to the new ways of living. In other words, symbolically, he's got to move from the old city to the new. Are you sure you want Jesus to intervene in whatever it is that's plaguing you? There's a very funny story I originally heard in connection with the town of Port Dover, of all places. I heard it years ago somewhere else. Port Dover, of course, is that lovely lakeside community we have with a lovely beach area. And then this fabricated story involves an itinerant preacher and healer who was ministering to those in the town of Port Dover. One day, the preacher came across an old fisherman whose hands were all gnarled up with arthritis. And the preacher prayed over his hands, and he was healed. Another day, the preacher came across an elderly woman whose back was so severely stooped over. He prayed over her, and immediately she was healed and could straighten up. And on another day, the preacher came across a man who was in a wheelchair whose leg was badly damaged and in a cast. He was about to pray over the man, and the man said, "Hold on a minute. Stop. Don't you want to be healed?" the preacher said. "No," replied the man. "Don't you want to get out of that chair and walk again?" the preacher asked. "No, not really." The preacher said, "Why not? Why not get up and walk?" "Well, to tell you the truth, I hurt my leg a while back at work and I've just now got my compensation." If we ask for a miracle, please be advised that Jesus will demand that miracle take us somewhere. Somewhere perhaps we'd rather not go. So again, I ask, is Jesus dead? What do you want him to do for you? Are you prepared for the consequences? Is it really healing you desire, or are you really just looking for sympathy and the attention of the crowd? Do you really want your relationship healed? Are you just looking for an excuse to end it? Do you really want your children to find God, knowing that in finding Him, they might be called to the farthest corners of the globe and maybe even into some hostile places to serve Him? You see what Jesus is getting at here? Are you sure you know what you want? There's an old English proverb, be careful what you ask for, you might just get it. Another funny little story I heard about a childless couple who brought their heartache to the local Catholic priest. And he was about to leave for a few years service at the Vatican, and he offered the couple to light a candle to intercede for them that they might have a child. And some years later, the priest returned home and visited the couple, only to find their little house just overrun by children, kids everywhere. Oh, how marvelous, the priest said. My prayers have been answered, but where's your husband? The very tired mother said, he's gone to the Vatican to blow out the candle. Do you know what you want? Bartimaeus knew what he wanted and in many ways was prepared to accept the challenge inherent in getting what he wanted. I want to see. Jesus said, go your way, your faith has healed you. But Bartimaeus did a very wise thing. It's a lesson for all of us. Bartimaeus got what he believed he wanted, and Jesus told him to go his own way and go and find his direction with his new vision, right? It's an offer Jesus makes to all of us when he intercedes for us. Jesus is a gentleman. He will never force us. He will never coerce us into doing something we will not do of our own free will. After Jesus heals us, restores our relationships, grants our heart's desire, he sets us free. True mercy, true grace is always offered with no strings attached. Remember the 10 lepers that Jesus healed? The only obligation they had, according to the law, was to show themselves to the authorities to be declared clean. After that, they could go wherever they wanted. Only one came back voluntarily to thank Jesus. We are always free to do what we please with our newfound wealth or health or wholeness. I notice Jesus does this in almost every case of healing that I read in the Bible. He heals people and he lets them go. He doesn't force them in any direction. He lets them choose the path they take. Bartimaeus was free to go wherever he wished with Jesus' blessing, but what does Bartimaeus do? What's his reaction to being healing, to getting what he wanted? Bartimaeus has said that he followed Jesus along the way, on the road. Of many courses that Bartimaeus could have chosen, he chose to do what? Follow Jesus. In fact, his following may have been very significant. This story is so vivid in detail that it's certainly a first-hand account. And because he is probably the only person named who was healed, it's quite probable that Bartimaeus was a prominent member of the early church. His choice was to follow Jesus. Did you know that in the early church, the people who followed Jesus were called people of the way? Bartimaeus chose to follow Jesus' way. What do you want me to do for you? Jesus is asking each one of us today. In our distress, in our effort to fight through the crowds, to be heard by God in Christ, do we even know what we want? Actually, I must confess that I think I know what we all want. I really do. I think I know what you all want. We all want to hear these words said to us. Cheer up. Come on. He's calling you. In the end, that is what we want more than anything else, I think. I think we can endure a great deal in this life if we only had an awareness that Jesus knew we were here. That Jesus was willing to listen to us, maybe even heal us, or resolve whatever crisis is currently in our lives. Well, to you I say, cheer up. Come on. He's calling you. But if you want to be near him, you have to respond. You have to get up from where you are and go to him. Because that's why I think we suffer so much. We just don't want to move from where we are because we know that if we get close to Jesus, things are going to change for us. The most powerful thing that will change is that we'll be given, like Bartimaeus, a new vision. A vision of what our lives can be despite the struggles, despite the impairments. What do you want Jesus to do for you? More than anything. More than physical healing. More than the restoration of your relationships. More than a new job. More than any possible problems you have. Jesus offers you a new vision and a new direction.